This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the latest reaction show for TNA's Slammiversary 2015. And if you know anything about us, we're not big TNA fans here on these reaction shows, but they did a pay-per-view proper. You had to pay for it, presumably. And so with that said, we're gonna do it. We're gonna make sure that the Place to Be Nation has a reaction show. Tonight, this might be an indication of the popularity of TNA. I don't know, but it's only two of us. It's me and my good buddy Dylan Hells from Wrestling Culture. Dylan, it was just the two of us for the last ROH show, and now we're doing TNA.
Yep, we sure. And also, in a homage to the great production value of TNA, we had a very bizarre Skype snafu as we tried to get this show rolling. So I am coming to you courtesy of the telephone and not Skype. I'm currently locked out of my Skype account, and TNA's customer service is about as good as WWN Live. So I unfortunately may sound a little bit more muffled than usual, but that's okay. I mean, it's a TNA event. It feels like we should really be doing something second, third rate. So
we should just put this on Blog Talk Radio and then record it off Blog Talk. Yeah, actually, you sound fine now. But as you were talking, you did a Freudian slip and you said that TNA's customer service was as good as WNN Unlocks instead of Skype's customer service. But
well, it's
same thing.
It's all the same at the end of the day.
Anyway,
same level of quality.
Well, let's get to the card, man, before our computers blow up from the insanity that is TNA. Anyway, first match, we have an elimination match for the X Division title. Tigre Uno versus DJZ, aka Zema Ion, versus Manic. You know, Dylan, I used to watch TNA sporadically, mainly to catch the X Division matches over the last 12 years. You know, you always hear that TNA sucks, but the X Division is where it's at. Before we get to this match, does it feel a little strange that the X Division used to be guys like Austin Aries, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and now it's Manic and Tigre Uno, and Zion has been there for a while. But what do you think about like the change in focus on the X Division?
I think in a way it's I don't want to say it's come full circle, because that's not true at all. Because the early days of TNA is really the X Division that put the promotion on the map to the degree that it was even on the map.
And I think, right.
You know, if you go back and, you know, I did an interview with Scott Hensley, the promoter of the Scenic City Invitational, which was the independent wrestling tournament that I'm really excited about coming up in early August. And when I, you know, in the interview I did with him, which is at the voicesofwrestling.com, Scott kind of, and he's huge into independent wrestling now, and he kind of talks about how the X Division that got him into indie wrestling. So for all the criticism that we levy against TNA, you know, and my two younger brothers and my uncle, I know, have a similar story. So for all the, you know, criticisms we levy against TNA, the early days, the X Division, I really feel like had a pretty big impact, no pun intended, on getting some of these guys face time and sort of letting people understand that there were people out there that were good, talented wrestlers that could do different and fresh things that weren't affiliated with the WWE and maybe hadn't been affiliated with WCW or ECW either. So, you know, that's a long way of saying, though, that I don't feel circle in a way. I feel like you get to a point where, and this happened with the WCW Cruiserweights too, where the guys that sort of put the division on the map become too big for the division.
Right.
Like you can't have Rey Mysterio there anymore because he's too over, and it feels like you're relegating him to second class citizen status. You know, you can't have preliminaries there because he's just too good to be in a match that's going to be an opener on pay-per-view. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I agree. And that's why it's weird, because unfortunately what kind of brought the X Division to the table now is lacking, you know, because now it's just, okay, it's our code word for cruiserweight division or guys who like to do a lot of spots and fly, versus where it used to be just a way of saying that this is kind of the new school of wrestling. These are guys like Loki or Styles who are going to give you something completely different from the crap that Jarrett's going to feed you in the main event, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is true, but I think that has more to do, in fairness to TNA, I think that has more to do with the evolutionary changes in the wrestling business than it does.
Okay.
Which, to be fair, they in part may have caused, but you know, it has more to do with the changes in the wrestling business itself than it does with TNA, specifically,
right.
At least in from my perspective. Now, having said that, you know, and getting to the match itself, I actually thought this was pretty much a perfect opener from the perspective of, if you're going to have an X Division match, it's going to kind of be a throwback X Division match where it's just guys wildly running through their spots and going balls out, and keeping that breakneck pace and doing a bunch of impressive stuff. And you're trying to heat up a Impact Zone crowd that, frankly, is not always that hot. This match absolutely succeeded at what it was, you know, what it set out to do.
Right.
So,
no, I agree with that, man. It was a fun match, a hot opener. And these matches, and we brought this up with ROH, sometimes the best you can hope for is just don't blow your spots. You know, just hit your spots.
I mean, that was the role these guys were in, you know, was to just get their shit in and get it done. You know, it was a spot fest, but it wasn't a spot fest where it was like guys no selling stuff or anything like that. It was just guys running through their spot. I like the fact that it was an elimination match. I greatly prefer elimination triple threats to triple threats where, you know,
agreed,
first fall wins. I think
yes. It
adds a little bit to the match. So I thought that was good. Good touch. Manic, I thought, looked really good. You know, TJ Perkins is a really good wrestler. So, you know, anytime he gets a chance, I actually thought all three of them looked pretty good. I thought the Tigre's crazy spinny finisher thing is kind of almost so out of control that it actually looks better than it would if it was more to a particular form.
Right.
DJZ hit his crazy flip plancha and almost hot shotted himself on the barricade. So we got a bunch of cool shit thrown into a relatively small amount of time. And it was announced, the match itself was announced late. But then again, this was kind of a bizarre pay-per-view in terms of matches that were announced and things of that nature. So,
but
this was one of the better matches on the show, I thought.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to agree with you and move on. And let's get to match number two, the former bromans, Robbie E versus Jesse Godders. Okay, and I'm just going to start off and say I was shocked. I enjoyed the hell out of this match, but I did have issues with it. Robbie E, man, early on, man, I thought he looked good. He looked pissed off. I loved him using his shirt to toss Jesse across the ring. I loved him diving out, or throwing Godders out, you know, kind of getting nasty. But man, I really, really enjoyed Godders' offense in this, man. It's like he came in with the focus. Once he did that spot where he throws Robbie E into the stairs, he then follows with a power slam on the floor. And man, he was working that back throughout the whole match. I really enjoyed that part. But man, Robbie E's offense was rough, man. I liked him selling. I did not like his offense. Lazy clotheslines. Just, it felt like, oh man, it just, and then the finish was so lame. It was, man, Godders put so much work into that back, and it was like the most casual reverse DDT of all time by Robbie E to finish off Godders. I just, it killed it for me because I really like the work in the match. So it feels like I'm giving this match a backhanded compliment when I really enjoyed it, except for some things that really took me out. What's your take?
I have a pretty similar take. You know, Jesse Godvers is doing like a knockoff Chris Masters gimmick.
Yes, and I love
which is, I was just about to say, it's very suitable for him. I think he has a lot of heel charisma. I think he's got a good look. He's not bad on the mic. You know, he's got a lot of positives. I've been a big Robbie E fan for a while. Not so much that I think he's a great wrestler, but I think he's he's a guy that it's a shame he wasn't in the WWE system,
right,
where they actually lots of times get the best out of guys as opposed to out of the worst. Because I've seen him have matches on Independence where he's really looked pretty good. You know, what I will say is, to me, the two most impressive things about this match were the heat that it got. I mean, this is an undercard feud in TNA, and you can argue this was actually the hottest match on the show in terms of the live crowd reaction.
Maybe. That Storm Magnus had quite a bit of heat, too.
Oh, like I said, I don't think it was... It's not that it was clearly the hottest match, but the fact that the undercard feud, including these two guys of all people, got as much heat as it did in that building, which has been known to absolutely take a shit on something that are frankly much better and much more interesting on paper, to me, that tells you that they worked really hard and they worked a smart match. The other thing that I thought was really impressive about this match was it was not needlessly ambitious. You know, they came out, they worked that breakneck pace early. It was like, you know, Robbie was kind of going for broke. He got cut off, and they weren't afraid to do things like a bear hug spot. And
yes,
it actually worked because the crowd was into it, you know?
Well, and because, and something that we don't see, especially, I hate to like stereotype guys of that build, you know, your bodybuilder types that are more in there to be your eye candy than they are to be workers. But, man,
yeah,
it doesn't take a lot to make me happy, man. Just use a little bit of logic. If you're going to hurt a guy's back, work on the back. That's all I ask. And that's what he did.
Well,
I'm satisfied.
It's important to note too, though, that you're criticisms in some quarters of the internet that, you know, things like that don't work anymore because the crowd they want to see guys do, you know, everybody in wrestling to the tope, for example, and every, you know, like they want to see crazy power spots at the two big guys. You know? And I'm not saying that there's not some truth to that, but I think that is heavily exaggerated because, again, this was one of the most over matches on the show, and it was built around stuff like a fucking bear hug between two undercard wrestlers who weren't even really that over coming into the match.
Yeah.
So
the only reason the bear hug worked was because he fucking power slammed him on the floor earlier.
On the floor.
Yeah.
And Robbie had taken those bumps, you know?
Yep.
So now, as to Robbie's offense, I was not particularly impressed with it either, but in defense of Robbie, I will say that I don't want to say it's not his fault, but what I do want to say is, A, he's a guy who's pretty much been, you know, his whole gimmick has been as a stooge for the last couple of years. So he's probably not out there practicing his offense as much as other guys. But B, Jesse Godvers doesn't take offense all that well either. So it probably was one of those matches where the dynamic was always going to be that Jesse's stuff was going to look better than Robbie's because that was the thing that plays to both guys' strengths. But the finish is indefensible, though. You know, the finish I can't defend. Because you know, you build this match, this slow building match that the crowd is 100% with them, far beyond what anybody could have reasonably surmised, and then you get to the finish and it's like this flat, not even particularly good looking reverse DDT that comes completely out of nowhere. I felt bad for the guys.
Yeah,
you know, especially
after those two nasty power bombs by Godders that were ace. I love those two power bombs he did earlier. And then to just finish with that, like, it would have been different, man, if, like, you know, besides the one DDT hope spot Robbie E got earlier, if there was really something that said Godder's neck was injured. But there was nothing like
yes.
that throughout the match. And then I could have accepted the finish. But it just coming out of the blue like that and just the casual way it happened just really, really hurt it for me. But I think that's going to be a theme we're going to see throughout the show is who the fuck booked these finishes, you know, from here on out. Like, You watch that opener and you say, okay, perfectly acceptable match, perfectly acceptable finish. After this, man, it's all questionable finishes, foreshadowing straight off the bat. But
yeah, totally agree with that.
So far, though, two matches in, but I'm saying, okay, you know, and I'm not invested in TNA's product. I know they had a lot of publicity this week. So two matches in, I'm already thinking, hey, thumbs up for me so far. You know,
and it's worth mentioning that the last couple of times I decided to randomly watch TNA pay-per-views, they were actually way better than you'd think, given TNA's reputation. So
right.
two matches in, I'm thinking maybe this is going to be another one of those miracle shows where TNA actually puts out a good pay-per-view, you know?
Well, let's go to our next match. I didn't have much to say about it, man. This is Matt Morgan's return, I guess, to pay-per-view at least, versus Bram. You know what? I have no idea who Bram is. Give me some background on this guy.
Bram is Charlotte Flair's husband. He was originally in WWE Developmental.
Right.
Got busted on at least one DUI, I think, if not a couple. He was part of the Ascension originally. He's actually, in my view, although this match didn't necessarily illustrate that all that well, I actually think he's a pretty good hand a lot of the time. And, he's a guy who actually had a match with Abyss, of all people, on TNA TV last year when I was doing the Impact Report for WrestleMania.com, where he actually the match was actually decent. You know, and if you're having a decent match with Abyss in 2014, you got to be pretty good, at least in theory. He's shown me things before. Tonight, he didn't necessarily show me things. So,
this is bad.
Here's the thing about this match, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, but it wasn't even that it was terrible, right? I mean, it wasn't like you watch and thought, oh, God, I want to gouge out my eyes. This is complete shit. It's just, it's the same old sort of tired, lazy, garbage tropes. Here's a cooking sheet I'm going to hit you with. You know, here's a trash can. I mean, like, all the same lame, stupid stuff that we've been seeing for 15, 16 years now. And not done particularly well. You know, Matt Morgan is a guy who here's the thing too. The TV this week, Vader, Vader shows up. I thought Vader had a pretty decent match with Bram, just probably a stupid finish or whatever. And then you build with Vader to get to Matt Morgan. Why wasn't this Bram versus Vader? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If you're gonna bring in Vader, you may as well and have Bram win the match, you may as well have Vader come in on the actual pay-per-view. It just was really odd. Matt Morgan thinks he's never been any good.
Isn't this nuts? Because Matt Morgan stinks. But looking at the guy, just looking at him, you think, man, that guy's $1 million. You know, you can see where Cornette would think this guy's going to be the next big thing. But, dude, after watching him for 3 minutes, you know he's the shits.
He doesn't get it. You know, there's some guys where they have the physical tools, right? Like they can work, but they lack the charisma. Or there's some guys where they're good on the mic, but putting them in the ring exposes them so badly and so quickly that you know there's going to be a natural limit to how far they can go. And then there are guys like Matt Morgan where, you know, you're absolutely right. He's got a look that, at the very least, it tells you this guy should be something. And he's, you know, because of his basketball background, he at least theoretically is a decent athlete that should be able to contribute more than some of these other guys who are his size historically have been able to. But he doesn't have any presence at all. I mean, in terms of presence, he's the smallest 7-foot guy I've ever seen.
I would not argue with that.
He has no presence at all, you know. And again, like, I kind of felt bad for Bram here. Not that Bram is a world-beatingly great wrestler, but he's proven himself to be decent to competent and maybe even pretty good at times. And they put him in a situation where he was simply not going to look good. And that whole bit with him searching around under the ring for a prop that wasn't there was both indicative of, like, it was like a metaphor for TNA itself, but it was also indicative of why these type of matches are so dumb.
Yes.
Like, if you're having a match like this that is so dependent on that particular prop that if the prop's not there, the match literally stalls out and nobody knows what the fuck to do, then you shouldn't be having the match in the first place.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's one of those things where the guy picks up a win over a guy who has been pushed in the past in TNA, so it should mean something, but it's going to mean absolutely nothing. Like, it will absolutely mean nothing on TV this week, right? I mean,
yeah, which is crazy because they could have brought in Vader for the trap tonight, and it might have actually meant something.
This is true. No, very true. Very true. Well, let's move on to our next match because we might have spent more time on that match than the actual match itself. So let's move on. And this one, Austin Aries versus Davey Richards. Now, full disclosure for the Place to Be Nation, neither myself nor Dylan are Davey Richards fans. I know, Dylan, it would not be a lie to say that we think he's actively one of the worst wrestlers we've ever seen, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true.
Okay, that's true. However, I am an Austin Aries fan, and I'm pretty sure that you are as well, right?
I'm a big Aries fan, absolutely.
There we go. You know what? This might have been one of the best singles Davey Richards matches I've ever seen. And to me, it's weird because I'm working on the Davey Richards scale. How many times did he pop up after a move that should have been sold for a few seconds? And surprisingly, he sold most of the offense given by Aries. When Aries hit an offensive move, he sold it, or he played it up like he was hurt or injured, which Davey Richards hardly ever does. The only issue I had was I didn't really have an issue with it. I just thought it was corny as fuck. And that was going from the capture suplex into the frog splash double stomp. What the fuck? A frog splash double stomp. And it didn't even look that cool, you know, because it looked like he didn't even stomp on him. But whatever. Okay. Still, a frog splash double stomp. Okay, whatever. Having said that, you know what, man? The highest compliment I can give to a Davey Richards match was that I enjoyed it, and it was fun, and I enjoyed this match. But as we talked about with the last match, and we talked about the match before, what a stupid fucking finish. And you can explain the finish to the people out there, because I guarantee you, if anyone listens to the show, I guarantee you 75% of them did not watch tonight's show.
I'd say more like 90%.
Okay, 97% of the people did not watch tonight's show.
Well, I mean, the thing, okay, so the finish is basically Bobby Roode comes out, and you know, because for those who don't know, what's been going on in TNA is there's Bobby Roode and Austin Aries are in a tag team called the Dirty Heels, who are feuding with the American Wolves, which is Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, over the tag belt. And this match was to determine the final stipulation for the last match in their series to determine who's going to be the new tag team champion. But here's the thing about this match, Will.
Mental gymnastics. Mental fucking gymnastics. Keep going.
And I don't know if you know this, Will, but they've already taped the TV for after Slammiversary.
What the fuck?
So this match, the match that was set up tonight has already occurred. The final match between these two teams has actually already taken place. And what you may also not know, depending on how closely you follow wrestling news and TNA in general, is that allegedly, at least, Austin Aries last night in the promotion was tonight. He's allegedly leaving TNA. That's what's been reported. So Austin Aries went out by winning tonight on a roll-up caused by distraction to set up a match on the for tomorrow or for the tapings that are going to be next, for the tapings that have already happened for a show that doesn't air till next week, where they presumably don't beat the American Wolf for the title.
Oh my God!
So it is about as convoluted as you can possibly imagine.
So anybody who's following TNA probably has already seen the spoilers, knew who was going to win this match before the match ever took place.
Well, actually, I will give TNA credit in this regard. I don't know that they ever said, I don't know that it was ever announced at the tapings that have already occurred, who picked the stipulation for the last match. So I suppose it's possible that people wouldn't have known that Aries would have picked a stipulation or whatever. But the point is, the point is
That's some WCW taping champions recording their promos at worldwide level shit, right? who are the champions that they like they were showing? Was it Paul Roma? Was it Paul Roma and like?
I thought it was Bunkhouse Buck and Dick Slater, but I can't remember.
But you know what I'm talking about, right? Like when they used to like record like the champions who hadn't lost their belts yet. You know, it's like, oh my God, this is what a fucking company, man.
No,
I enjoyed this match.
No, and the match was good. You know what I mean? I thought it was the best match on the show, actually.
I wouldn't argue with that. With the stupid fucking finish.
Well, here's the thing about the finish, you know, and then I'll make a more general comments about the match, but the thing about the finish that was so stupid, aside from the booking and all the chaos I just tried to outline, which I'm sure people don't understand because it's unfathomable, frankly, but on top of all the ranting I just did, they blew the finish and didn't even catch it right on the camera. The fucking production people that weren't even in place to see the roll-up until there was already, like, the official was already at, like, a two count.
To be fair, when you've already threatened most of the production crew by two neo-Nazis, I wouldn't doubt that one of the Harris brothers was actually the camera guy, or the guy in the back fucking with the cameras.
That is a good point. Okay, we can't discount that.
Seriously, Dylan, to tell people how inept this fucking company is, explain to them what happened with the Harris brothers this week. This is fucking jaw-droppingly stupid shit.
Well, what happened? Did I not know about this? I mean,
No, this is like where they were hired to lead production, and production were told, everybody in TNA was told they're not going to get their checks until mid-July.
Oh, yeah. So they've got theoretically they've got the Harris brothers as enforcers, which, by the way, I just want to say this for the record. Doesn't this sound like a Sons of Anarchy episode? you bring in some Nazi bikers to like make sure that Kara runs on time, make sure the porn company runs correctly. But I mean, this is it is completely ridiculous. It's beyond belief that this kind of stuff is happening. And there's more production snafus on the show. This isn't even like top.
No, I know. But then the Harris brothers told the production crew, if you're unhappy with the way things are and not getting paid for a month and a half, the only thing you have to do is shake our hand and walk away. One, I don't want to shake a Nazi's hand, okay? And two, unless you're the guy writing the checks, I don't have anything to say to you. You know what I mean? Complete bullshit.
I do want to say a couple things about this match, because we could go down the rabbit hole of shit talking the ineptitude of TNA for the entirety of this podcast.
I plan on another it.
but this match, like, it was on paper sort of a heaven and hell match. You've got arguably the best guy that TNA has ever had, maybe even in some ways, in the sense that Aries was even able to have a really great year a few years ago in TNA when nothing else in TNA was ever at all.
Yeah, I mean, you have those guys, Aries Styles, that's in the conversation because he's always had good matches. Angle at his peak, you know.
Joe
at his peak. But Aries is in that like top five discussion. You're absolutely right.
And then you got Richards, who I think is absolutely the shit, you know. But What I thought was smart about this match, and I don't know if it was this calculated by Aries or if this was just the match, the way the match was laid out, or maybe a little bit of both, but the opening of the match was set up in such a way where it was almost like Aries was deliberately doing what he could to keep it from going into this like rah-rah crazy like Davey Richards match. Like, he kept bailing out of the ring. He kept like avoiding the big Davey Richards spot. So when they finally built to those spots, it was actually Aries who was hitting his big spots first. And yes. Then Richards had to come back from underneath to reel off his stuff. And Richards' credit, he had an excellent bullet tope in this match. And you know, one of my big criticisms of Richards is not just the fact that he did the pop-up, no-selling, and all that kind of horse shit. It's also that for a guy whose reputation is that he's like this super crisp guy, I think a lot of his offense looks like complete and utter dog shit. Like, I have no clue why people think he's a good offensive wrestler, even, because I don't think his stuff even looks all that good that often. It just looks really phony. It doesn't have the impact you really expect it to have. So, you know, I'm not even willing to let him off the hook in that regard.
And for a guy who's so choreographed, it's like, man, you're kind of dancing with two left feet. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, but here, you know, he did some really cool stuff. The spot with the T's missed drop kick, and he did the midair backflip, I thought looked really great.
Yeah.
You know, and then the follow up drop kick that came after. You know, Aries healing on that little kid in the front row was really cool, because you don't see that stuff really on TV that much anymore.
What I liked about this, though, is that Richards usually tries to act like the badass shooter, and I did not get that vibe from him at all tonight, that he was the badass shooter. He actually, like you said, played like a guy working underneath as a babyface, as he should, and it worked out great.
Yeah. I mean, this was a, you know, it wasn't a great match, but I thought it was a good match, and maybe even borderline very good. And, you know, Aries, if this is in fact his last TNA match, and by all accounts it appears that it's going to be, you know, going out in such a way where you're able to have that good a match with a guy who I think is pretty terrible is actually a pretty impressive way to leave the company, because he easily could have phoned it in tonight. You know, nobody would have blamed him, frankly.
Right.
You know, and he really went out, and I think he went out with the mentality that he was going to steal the show, and I think in all the ways he did steal the show.
And you know what? I think that's a theme throughout the show, is that And I'm going to give everybody who works for TNA credit in this sense. Whether I like the matches or not, not one time, even for Matt Morgan and Bram, I felt like they tried their hardest. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like one person on this show phoned it in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that, you know, some people might say, well, it's a pay-per-view. You know what? Of course they're not going to. Yeah, but this is a company that is, I mean, in a state right now, particularly with, and has the reputation of treating talent, and with the way talent relations and things of that nature have been going on in recent months with the friggin' company, you know, the reality is these guys could have easily gone out and shit the bed, and frankly, nobody would have blamed them. I wouldn't have blamed them.
Nobody.
And instead, you're right. I mean, in terms of if you're looking purely at effort, and you're not making an aesthetic judgment, but you're judging basically on whether or not the guys worked hard and tried to perform to the best of their abilities, I think there's no question that it was a night full of guys who were really busting their ass. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, that'd be very, very hard to dispute.
Yeah.
And this was the best match on the show, though, from my perspective. I think Aries deserves a lot of credit. I think Richards deserves credit for it. It's always sort of begrudging that I give them credit for anything. But this was a good match. It's just a shame, in my opinion, it's a shame that the finish was so lame, and that they booked the TV the way they did it. You know, which, by the way, do you know why the TV situation was that fucked up, Will?
No.
Here's why. The TV situation was that fucked up because TNA was moved to Wednesday night. Because originally they were supposed to tape. So when they were moved, their taping schedule got all flubbed and fucked up, and it screwed that up. And rather than rearrange things, they just sort of went with
I got you.
Textbook TNA, though. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And now let's, and we're going to talk textbook TNA throughout this show, folks. I mean, we're just scratching the surface here. Let's move on to the next match. The Dollhouse versus Awesome Kong and Brooke. Now, the only thing I've been told for years is, hey, TNA's booking is horrible, but the knockouts are really the center of the division. You know, they blow the divas away. And I didn't really feel that in this match. I just felt like it was a match. But it wasn't the worst match on the show. I think that goes to Matt Morgan versus Bram. But I think it also has a storyline here where you bring Awesome Kong in, and her job now is to beat up on the Barbie dolls, right? That's her job, right?
Yes.
And so I like Awesome Kong, but I don't know if I actually like her as a worker or if I like the idea of Awesome Kong. You know what I mean? Like, I think I just like the idea of Awesome Kong, not the actual wrestler. What do you think?
I think that's a very apt point, in the sense that she's very unique. She's different than any other female women's wrestler that is in a major league promotion. Well, I hesitate to call TNA a major league promotion, but you know what I mean.
a promotion with a product.
Yes, a promotion with television. Put it that way.
There you go.
She's totally unique, and she stands out. And to be fair, that is a credit to her. You can't say that aspect is not a credit to her. However, I do think that she's somebody that is probably better on paper than she actually is in practice, which I think is really your point. It's not so much that she's bad. In fact, I thought in this match she was the best person in it. But you know, there's nobody in TNA that is, there's no female in TNA, I should say, that feels like a truly great wrestler.
Right.
None. And that includes Awesome Kong.
Or Gail Kim, who used to have really good matches. I feel like she's fallen off.
You know, and it's not that they're bad. You know, and at times over the last few years, some of these women have actually had very good. Even Taryn Terrell has had some really good matches over the last few years in TNA. But none of these ladies feel like somebody that, you know, like a Sasha Banks or a Becky Lynch or even a Charlotte from NXT, where you would go out of your way to see one of their matches. Like, or if you see their match on a card, you feel like, okay, this is a really good match. This is something that's going to add to the show. It makes me want to see the show more. The match itself was okay. I didn't think it was bad. But it just seemed like it was something that was a placeholder on the show. The Dollhouse get a lot of time on TV. It's kind of a little bit of a creeper gimmick. Maybe saying a little bit there is an understatement. But I don't know. TNA is not. And in fairness,
here's my argument. My argument is the worst thing to happen to the knockouts is the NXT women's division. You know what I mean? Because now there's a new paradigm. There's a new standard that they have to uphold, and they haven't matched it ever since NXT women.
Well, that's probably true. But in fairness, what I would say is I don't think I shouldn't say that, because the hardest core, the hardcore TNA fans are literally mentally deranged people that are a danger to themselves and society and shouldn't be allowed out of the house.
Hold on, Dylan. The views of Dylan Hells do not reflect the views of PlaceToBeNation.com. All right, continue.
Excluding those really extreme nut bars that are out there, and looking at the more moderate TNA hardcore fans, I think even they would acknowledge that the current knockouts are not at the level of what the knockouts were during that peak of, you know, when the beautiful people were not particularly having good matches, but they were a compelling television act, or when the Gail Kim and Awesome Kong series was going on, which was getting big ratings for TNA, and the matches were at minimum pretty good, if not good or even very good in some cases.
Right, right.
So in fairness to them, it's not like you're comparing the absolute best of the TNA knockouts to the best that we've seen out of the NXT ladies, but I do think you're right in the sense that nobody is going to, it's going to be increasingly difficult to grade on the curve for for women's wrestling because we've seen how good it can be now. So this idea that we just sort of let the standard be something that is okay or maybe pretty decent but not super outstanding, I think those days are behind us. Because, you know, now we have things like the Sasha Banks Becky Lynch match from this year, which can tell us that these people can have a really good match.
Yeah, no, the paradigm shifted, man. You know what I mean? It's and they're going to have to deal with it. But the sad thing is, I don't think TNA has enough time left to be able to match it. You know what I mean? It
just No. They're done. They're done in the form that they are currently constituted. Might they survive like cockroaches surviving a nuclear holocaust? I suppose it's theoretically possible because this company has survived numerous instances where it looked like they were absolutely dead as a doornail.
It's absolutely true.
But I can't imagine how they're going to pull through this time unless the Jarrett GFW alliance or potential buyout speculation comes to fruition.
We have plenty to talk about Jeff Jarrett coming up, but let's take a break now, Dylan. Let's take a time to give a shout out to the Place to Be Nation and all the great shows you can hear on Place to Be Nation. When we come back, we're going to talk about the last three matches and what we think is the future of TNA. So you're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Show, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport, featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO-PTBN Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Okay, we're back here on Place to Be Nation. This is Will, and I'm joined by Dylan Hills, and we're talking TNA Slammiversary. Maybe the last Slammiversary TNA ever has. Who knows, right? the stranger things have happened, but it looks that way. And right now we're about to get into the next match, which is an unsanctioned street fight or an unsanctioned match between James Storm and Magnus. Now, James Storm has been a TNA mainstay probably since close to the beginning, if not the beginning. Magnus is a guy they pushed really hard, and then they kind of let him slip, and then they brought him back. I don't know. Kind of weird thing with Magnus. But this is a match where it reinforces what we said earlier, where both guys were trying really hard. But I don't think Magnus is a very good brawler. He has really weak brawling offense. When you're brawling, you want to see a bloody fight. I mean, this is a match where they use plenty of plunder. And I don't think TNA has any hesitation using blood. I mean, hell, we saw that great bloodbath between EC3 and Rockstar Spud earlier this year. So I know they'll use blood. This is a match that called for blood. You're going to give me an unsanctioned street fight. One, if you're going to give me a street fight, you better give me two guys who can punch. And Magnus is not a good puncher. Sorry. Storm, all right, whatever. But it was a match where a lot of the brawling felt like it was light as a feather. They relied heavily on, like, chairs, railings. They even went into the back, and they did a spot where Magnus does a big boot into the production equipment, and then probably in the only thing that production plan that went right tonight. Okay. Am I Dylan, right? I'm not mistaken. They then act like Magnus destroyed the production by making the screens in the arena go blank. So they couldn't even follow the wrestlers and what they were doing in behind the scenes. It's like the crowd's trying to get into this brawl. And then you do a spot where the people at home can still see the guys wrestling, but the entire crowd cannot because they give you the signal bars, you know, the error bars. So anyway, I thought, like I said, that I was going to give these guys props for working hard, but man, we have to talk about the finish. These guys did finisher overkill. And I made this comment on the Pro Wrestling Only message boards, but I'll say it again. If you told me Davey Richards was going to be in a pay-per-view and that there was a match that went 5 minutes too long with ridiculous kickouts, I would have told you 95% of the time that's the Davey Richards match. I would have laid my money on the table. I'd have gone to Vegas, bet the mortgage, bet it all. That's the Davey Richards match. But no, it was this one. Let's count down the silly kickouts. First, you have a spot where they throw salt, right? Who was it? It was Magnus was going to get salt thrown in his eyes, but he blocks it. Storm and the referee get salt in their eyes. Magnus hits his finisher. No ref. Storm comes back like salt was in his eyes for literally 20 seconds. All of a sudden, the guy can see with 20/20 vision. Hits his super kick. Kick out. Hits a double super kick, right? The one where he gives him a super kick, Magnus stumbles on the ropes, come back, hits another super kick. I'm thinking, okay, that's the finish, done, right? The double super kick is a finish. Kicks out of that. Does a spot where they go through the guardrail. Like the guardrail was propped up on two chairs. They go through that. Then the chairs, it got ridiculous. I stopped counting the kickouts, the false finishes. I thought it was stupid. Where I was willing to give them props earlier for trying to work hard with the brawling, by the end of this match, I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen, and there's no way I could give either guy props for what they were doing. I'm sorry for the long rant there, Dylan, but I thought it had to be said. It was fucking stupid. It was finisher overkill. It made both guys look like idiots, and I had nothing positive to say after that. What about you?
Well, you know, I want to kind of start at the beginning. I think you made a compelling case for your point there, and I don't even disagree with it. But I want to start at the beginning to make two points that were even more important. Well, maybe actually three points that were important about the street fight aspect of this. The first thing that's worth remembering is this feud was a feud built around James Storm deceiving Magnus's legitimate wife, Mickie
James. Oh, shit, that's right. I didn't even get into the backstory or how stupid it was.
And then trying to kill her. Now, what's sad about that is the fact that it was actually a very well-done angle up until they did that unbelievably stupid bit where Storm threw her off of a train platform. Or subway platform or whatever, and she allegedly, well, it turned out she was okay, but, you know, the implication was that she may have even been killed by a train, for all we know.
Yeah, that was some snidely whiplash kind of shit, man. Right.
And there was no sign of her tonight, I might add. But the point is, this is a feud where the guy was fucking with your wife, and we got what we got. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that makes it even worse. The second issue I have with the street fight aspect of this is, if you're going to run a plunder-based street fight, which I don't particularly like, it's not my favorite type of match. You and I talked about this when we did the Ring of Honor show. We were talking about the Red Dragon match. But if you're going to do a match like that, don't do another match like that earlier in the show with Bram and Matt Morgan.
Agreed.
That match was not even supposed to be a street fight. They made it a street fight on the fly. So why would you take away the one thing that this sort of plunder match has going for, which is that it's the only match like that on the show, by doing another one earlier in the show?
And by its very nature, the main event is going to have plunder in it.
Absolutely. So that's strike two. That's strike two. Strike three for me, though, is James Storm, I actually think, is a very good wrestler.
I do too.
And his track record, even in TNA, in these wild brawls, whether it's a tag team, you know, against LAX with whoever, Chris Harris or whoever, against people like LAX or the Naturals or whoever, or in singles matches with that great Texas Death Match with Chris Harris, which is one of the best matches in the history of TNA, or even with the series last year with Gunner, which was a very good series. They had a couple of excellent brawls. Storm is a guy who you know can work this style, and he can work a combination of the plunder and the blood. He can work a combination of your hate-filled fight that somebody like yourself and me want to see, where guys are bleeding and they're throwing the good punches and it looks like these guys legitimately want to kill each other rather than a choreographed, stage-managed theater show, and add in some plunder. He knows how to do that. So why not have the blood? Why not let them do the elements of that match? And I guess you're right in the sense that Magnus probably would have been even worse in a punch fest than what we got. But it just irks me that I know for a fact we've got a guy who excels at that type of match.
Yes.
Who's in the match.
Hey, strike four. We didn't even talk about this because this was a Loser Leaves Town match, right? Both guys have already been on record as saying they're done with TNA. This is it.
Yeah, they're done. And that's right. This is the effectively the walkout match for both of these guys from this promotion. And, you know, to me, I'm sorry, but a guy, Magnus, even though Storm has put in more time with the promotion, and I think that's perhaps why they let him get the Duke on the way out the door, I don't know. Magnus can't lose this match.
Another bad booking decision. You're right.
If a guy tries to murder your wife, that guy can't win. maybe if he's staying in the promotion and you're leaving, that would be ground for it. But other than that, you know, there's no way that guy can win the match. No way.
What would have been an appropriate finish here, bud? If they would have done a pre-tape. And I know it'd have been hard to try and match it up, but it's TNA, not like it really fucking matters. If they do a pre-tape where they're so angry at each other that they brawl outside, and you know, you have Magnus throw Storm off the bridge, you know, down the road or something, you know, to kind of get that justice. But both guys walk out of the building and it's over. You know, that's it. They're not coming back to TNA. And then you have James Storm get thrown in front of the bus or something.
It's like when Bobby Heenan gets kicked out of Raw.
Yes.
And he's gone forever.
But yes.
This was, here's the thing with this match. I can't call it bad. Like, I didn't think it was a bad match, but it was the wrong match. And in a way, the fact that it was the wrong type of match is worse than if it actually been a bad match. Because
right. Well, like I said, man, they worked hard. It was just stupid. It was a stupid match.
And the finish itself is worth mentioning. You get the double beer bottle smash, and Storm just sort of falls on top. So we have this feud, which up until that stupid angle with Mickie James had been actually quite a good feud in terms of build and execution, and they can't even bother to give us a legitimate resolution on the feud. You get like a bullshit, almost accidental end to the feud on top of everything else. And then the icing on the cake, in the post-match, you got both these guys doing sort of their Impact Zone send-off moment, which is completely ridiculous given the way the feud had been built and the way everything had been established. I mean, it was just, again, I can't call the match bad. And we did get.
Wait, would you agree it was stupid?
It was. I can't argue with that.
It was stupid.
It was. But more than being stupid was that it was wrong. It was the wrong kind of match.
Completely agree.
And I will say this though. This was probably the single most exciting moment on the entire show for me was when they did go off to the back. And the alleged production people, whatever they were screaming high voltage, high voltage, and I thought we were going to get a return of the high voltage tag team because this is TNA and you can't rule out something like that happen.
So. No, we don't want high voltage back. Oh God. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the next stupid match. Sorry, but Ethan Carter 3 and Tyrus. For those who don't know, that's Brodus Clay, Tyrus. Ethan Carter 3. What was his gimmick in NXT?
Derek Bateman
versus Bobby Lashley and Mr. Anderson. I thought it was hilarious. It just shows TNA production. Anderson comes out to do his microphone spiel. The microphone doesn't work. Thank fucking God, because I think the guy's an idiot. I think it's stupid. I hate his whole microphone shtick. I'm glad it was a failure. And I guess they tried to play it off like that was due to the effects of the Storm Magnus match.
I'm not even sure that was the case. I think it was a legitimate production problem.
That's how the announcers played it off.
They had so many production problems after that match. It was just... like, not only was the audio going in and out, but for some reason they had that far angle shot of the ring where you're just watching guys sweep the remnants of this plunder match out of the ring, sort of like and nobody knows what to do. Like they don't go to another camera shot, they don't try and go backstage, they don't put up a technical difficulties, anything. You're just sitting there hearing an occasional on the commentary.
followed by while
you look at the janitorial staff in the Impact Zone clean up. I mean,
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, even though you're on a cell phone and we're doing this TNA production style, our production tonight better than TNA's. I'm calling it.
Well, that is definitely damning us with faint praise and setting a low bar, but we'll take it.
And you know what, man? I don't know. I really don't want to talk about this match very long because two things I have to say is if Tyrus is not strong enough to give a double suplex to Bobby Lashley, Mr. Anderson, he shouldn't be given one. I legitimately thought that he broke Lashley's neck because he couldn't get him over completely.
Yep.
And I'm glad that the match didn't last long. The match was over quick. It was done. I actually like Ethan Carter III. I like his gimmick. I like that Rockstar Spud match earlier in the year. The other three, I have nothing for. And Bobby Lashley, I'm not even saying he's a bad wrestler. I'm just saying he's not somebody I care for. The other two, Tyrus Anderson, they're horrible. I think they're actively some of the worst wrestlers that are still employed today. And I'm just glad the match didn't last long. I'm glad that they were running out of time and that they got this over with. That's all I have to say about this.
Yeah, the match was, again, I can't call it bad so much as it was, probably more than any other match on the show, it was the biggest, why is this happening match? Like, there's like, you know, it's like they wanted to get these four guys on the show, so they just threw them into this. I mean, meanwhile, you got guys like Rockstar Spud, and I think Kenny King is still employed with the promotion, who are actually pretty good, who weren't on the card at all. You know, like, I agree with you. I really like EC3. I don't think he's an out-of-this-world talent, but I think he's a good talent. And more than being a good talent, he's a solid enough hand. He's good on the mic, and he's got a good look. So he sort of has all of the above. I actually think Lashley has improved a lot to the point where I wouldn't say I seek out Lashley matches, but he's somebody who I've been able to enjoy a lot over the last couple of years.
You don't avoid him the way I avoid Kane. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. and even more to the point than non-avoidance is the fact that I think he's turned into a pretty good hand more often than not. But this was not a match. This was not a match that was going to, where any of the guys were going to look good. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I don't even think it was designed to make any of the guys look good. What's mystifying to me is, because again, I don't know if you know this. Here's your spoiler. We're going to give people I'm going to give people 3 seconds. Ethan Carter III actually wins the world title from Kurt Angle. It's already been taped. So Ethan Carter III defeats Kurt Angle and wins the world title from him. So in theory, this show should have given Ethan Carter III a meaningful win, one final meaningful win going into that match, right? I mean, that's what I would do.
Sure.
So if you're going to do that, why not just book him versus fucking Lashley? The match would have been better. Lashley clearly doesn't have a problem jobbing because he jobbed tonight anyway. I mean, what the fuck?
I agree.
What's the point of it even being a tag match? It helps nobody.
Hey, and they can't even make the argument that they're just trying to give guys paychecks because they're not fucking paying their talent.
it absolutely blows my mind because they could have easily just done EC3 versus Lashley. The match would have been better. It would have been better use of both guys. The shitty guys wouldn't have been in the fucking match. It's something that would have set up the title change that they've already taken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no reason at all to have done this match. This is stupid. It's
just stupid. Well, let's get into more stupid here. Okay, and this one we got, man, I don't know. I'm sure we have enough time. King of the Mountain match, Jeff Jarrett versus Matt Hardy versus Drew Galloway versus Eric Young versus Bobby Roode. And you know what? I'm not even opposed to any of these guys in this match. I think they're fine. You know, some of them, like Galloway, I used to really like. Eric Young, I know he's got a lot of criticism. I even liked Eric Young, like when he won his world title. You know, I thought, fine. Jeff Jarrett, I know can be good sometimes, but a few things. And first, before I get to the match and the different guys in it, the King of the Mountain rules are so fucking stupid that it's almost impossible to enjoy this match. So let me get this straight, Dylan. You correct me because this is what I caught, because I've never seen a TNA King of the Mountain match before. All I know is that Jeff Jarrett is the King of the Mountain guy. Okay, so the belt is hanging above the ring, but before you're allowed to retrieve the belt, you have to get a pinfall, so you're eligible to be King of the Mountain first, right?
Actually, that's not true. You hang the belt above the ring.
No, but they had it hung above the ring already.
Well, what you do is you hang the belt above the ring. You don't retrieve the belt. You put the belt up there.
No, I thought that they had the belt above the
ring. Oh, no.
I thought, like, see, this is what I didn't get. I thought I missed something because I thought you had to climb the ladder, get the belt, bring it down, and then go back up the ladder and hang it on there.
Oh, maybe you do. I actually couldn't even follow that.
I didn't even get that because they had that spot where I don't know. God. I don't even know who's fighting for it. Maybe Galloway and Hardy or something. Like, and they drop it, and Jarrett picks it up. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is so TNA. They fucked up their own gimmick. Because I thought that they had retrieved the belt from the top, because I could have swore that at the beginning of the match, the belt was dangling up there at the top.
I thought
honestly,
in order to get it, you had to have gotten the pin, go down, then go hanging up.
Honestly, it's possible that you're right, and I don't even remember.
Okay. So we're both in agreement that so far it's a fucking stupid match. Then, if you're one of the guys who gets pinned, you have to be in a penalty box for 2 minutes. This match is fucking stupid. And then, okay, so this is like from the old vestiges of Vince Russo land or something, and it's horrible, convoluted garbage. But then, okay, so we look at Jeff Jarrett. One, he looks fucking old. I don't know what happened. I don't know how much stress he got from this Global Force Wrestling, but he looks fucking old. Like Nick Bockwinkel at 60 looked better than Jarrett at 50. You know what I mean? Like, legit. Then, I can't get over the fact that Jeff Jarrett is a face. You know what I mean?
It's not just that he's a face. It's that there's no reason. He's a face even though he's the head of another company.
Yeah, like So here he is. He's a face. That's how he's presented. He still uses that stupid fucking guitar, which is fucking stupid 20 years later. He still uses the same lame finisher that doesn't look like it could hurt a fly. I mean, dude, we saw people in this match go. We saw a pile driver onto a ladder that didn't break, which was one of the stupidest spots I've ever seen in my life. Like, dangerous stupid. You know?
That spot is maybe the most dangerous spot I've ever seen.
Well, hold on. Earlier in the match, fucking Drew Galloway gives his package DDT. What's it called? The final DDT or whatever. His finisher. He gives his finisher.
Future Shock.
The Future Shock to Matt Hardy on a ladder. And ideally, you would think, okay, well, if he gives a DDT to a guy on a ladder, it's going to hurt the guy, you know, he's giving it to. But he lands full force with his back on the ladder. And I thought, that is the dumbest fucking move I've ever seen. Like, at least when you give a DDT on a chair, the idea is that the guy that gives the DDT isn't actually landing on the chair. All the impact goes on from the chair goes into the guy's head. On this one, it's like, no, his back absolutely got destroyed by that ladder. It's like he threw himself into the ladder. And so, and then you follow up that up with the pile driver spot where theoretically you're thinking, well, man, if that guy's head went through the ladder rails, then the guy who actually received the pile driver would not actually get hurt. It would all be on the spine and the ass of the guy giving the pile driver. You know, these are the things that you have to do to actually make sense of this match. You know what I mean? Is think, why in the fuck would they do this? Ignore all the climbing the ladder and hanging the belt bullshit. Just the moves they were pulling off were stupid. And then they complete, like, there was a spot where Galloway and Hardy were, like, feuding over, going up the ladder, probably had the belt. And then they just both kind of hopped down the ladder. And then, like, 3 seconds later, Jeff Jarrett pushes the ladder down. And then neither guy gets hit by the ladder, but then they both sell the ladder like it was death, even though it barely grazed them as it fell over. It was just, oh man, this was a clusterfuck. People, if you listen to me and JR on the Dangerous Alliance podcast, this isn't even a cheap plug. You know that we have what we call the Get the F Out program, where I don't say fuck on the air on the Dangerous Alliance podcast. You know, I'm trying to keep it family friendly. There's no other way of saying that this match was fucking stupid. It was a fucking mess. There was no reason for this match to have fucking occurred. Okay, it was fucking idiotic. Dylan, take over.
Aside from everything you just said, which is absolutely true, there literally was no reason for. I mean, this match had nothing to do with any TNA storyline.
None.
Nothing. This week on TV, Jeff Jarrett sauntered out to the ring, cut this promo, which actually, to be fair, the promo that Jarrett and Karen Jarrett cut was an excellent promo.
I thought Karen was awesome in that.
It was great. It was a tremendous promo. So I was giving them credit, but we didn't even know who else was going to be in this match until after the TNA TV show was already over. So it's not as if there were some sort of stakes in this match. They did announce there was going to be a King of the Mountain title, which, of course, Jeff Jarrett was officially crowned the first one tonight. Big surprise. But, you know, I mean, this is five guys, okay? And here's the deal with this match, too. And you sort of alluded to this at the very beginning when we first started talking about the match. It's not as if these guys are bad wrestlers. I mean, I thought Matt Hardy was tremendous last year. Literally. I thought he had a tremendous year last year. I thought Eric Young had a very good year last year. I'm not the biggest Bobby Roode fan in the world, but he's more than competent. Jeff Jarrett is a guy that I've actually defended many times, and Galloway is very good this year. He's having an excellent year this year working in Evolve and independent promotion. So these are all guys who could go. But in a match like this, with the unbelievably stupid stipulations that we can't even explain because they're so fucking dumb, it's impossible. I mean, imagine, think about this. Imagine this was the first TNA match you ever saw. Just imagine that for some reason, this was the first TNA match you ever saw. Would you ever even dream of watching this company again?
I didn't think I would dream of watching TNA after the last pay-per-view I saw. Because of, you know what drew me in tonight was the fact that this shit with Jarrett happened. Like, what the fuck is Jarrett doing back on there? The fact that there's all this backstage turmoil with the production and the Nazi production Harris Brothers and, you know, people not getting their paychecks. I wanted to see somebody just walk out, like, get introduced, get on the mic, cut a nasty promo. I was expecting like just complete chaos and shoot promos and just guys walking out, and I didn't get that. I got like typical old stupid TNA. You know?
Well, what's weird about this match is it's not just that there was no reason to do it, and it's not just that it was absolutely bizarre that Jarrett was booked as a face, even though he's theoretically from an outside company, right? And you know, like, I mean, it's not just those things, although those things are absolutely the case. It's also the fact that this is very possibly the last TNA pay-per-view ever. But it's also a TNA pay-per-view where if you're trying to keep the company alive, if that's actually a goal, you're presumably going to want to put your best foot forward in developing your own stars. And you're going to want to do something that's going to give people this idea of, you know, yes, we've had our struggles. Yes, our brand is not in the best position it's been in historically. We've done some fucked up things. We've made some bad mistakes. But we want you to leave the show saying, this guy is the face of our company, or this guy, or these guys are what our brand is all about. And how did the show close? It closed with a guy who, unless you believe that Global Force Wrestling is you know, buying out TNA or they're merging or whatever, it closed with the guy from another promotion in the ring with a new title and a big match that he just won over four of your guys, of your regular roster guys, including probably three of the four most pushed guys in the roster over the last several months. You know, so it's a mind-numbing bad decision. Like, there's no, you know, you almost have to believe that there's something going on with the merger, because even by TNA standards, it's like, why would they do this? Like it's so bizarre. And, you know, I do want to come back to, just to mention this again, as far as the match itself, it was a clusterfuck. There was a couple of a cool spots. I thought Galloway's dive off the Tony Box was a cool little moment.
It was like the one cool moment.
But one thing I do want to mention is, if you can find an animated GIF somewhere on the web of the Eric Young pile driver on Jeff Jarrett on that ladder, people need to see it. Because
it is,
when you consider Jarrett's age, the fact that he doesn't work that much anymore, you know, and the angle at which this happened, it may be the dumbest thing I've ever seen in wrestling. Like, it was completely unnecessary. It added nothing to the match at all. And I honestly couldn't tell if it was a botch or if these guys were just so stupid they thought it was a good idea. But
well, even scarier is if that ladder actually broke.
I mean, it was horrifying. The way, for in case people can't actually see this out, or unless they're sane people and they decide they don't want to watch any TNA, but the actual spot, Eric Young picks Jared up for this pile driver on the apron, and there's a ladder bridging from the barricade to the apron. And I guess presumably they were supposed to go through the ladder. I don't know.
I would hope not, because there was nothing to break their fall.
Young, instead of like landing on the full part of the ladder, like the meaty part of the ladder, like in the center or whatever, he basically pile drives Jared right on the edge of the ladder.
Yes.
Like right on the top of his head. And it didn't look, from the angle it was shot, which, because this was actually a rare case where the TNA production people actually were directly in place of the shot. It looked as if it wasn't even like Young protected him all that well. It looked as if the impact, you know, was taken right on the crown of Jared's head. I mean, in real time, it looked astonishingly bad. You know, like, it looked like a spot that you wouldn't want to see a fucking 21-year-old kid taking, you know, let alone a fucking 45, 50-year-old man, however the hell old Jared is. It was a crazy spot.
Yeah, completely stupid, man. Just baffles my mind. And you know what? I mean, okay, like I said, we both agree, everybody worked hard. Even the guys in this King of the Mountain match worked hard, but they just did a lot of stupid fucking shit that made no sense.
But, man, you know, besides a couple of matches, man, I can't give this a thumbs up. There's no way, man. One of the last, like, hour and a half or hour was abysmal, right? I mean, just you had the stupidity of the brawl. Then you had that bad tag match, but it was quick. And then you had this stupid match. Like, man, I thought, like, okay, they're going to go balls out. This is going to be a good show on effort alone. But, man, it's like, it's so TNA of them to ruin a show with horrible booking and stupidity. It just, man, this fucking company is stupid. And I cannot
wait. On top of the terrible production.
On top of the terrible production and the Nazis and all that stuff, yeah, of course. But we're just waiting. Man, I'm not, you know, I'm waiting patiently for this company to die so we can do that 7-hour epic, The Death of TNA with Chris Zellner and Bix. And I'm going to be on that show because I got plenty to say about this stupid company.
Well, I've got so many TNA scoops that look, I've become much more intimately wedded with certain facets of TNA's decline than I ever intended to be. And there are things that I have been withholding out of loyalty to people because I don't want people to trust me. You know, but there are certain things that I've already been given clearance. When the company goes belly up, I can talk about them.
Okay, so well, that's let's not cock block the audience.
Publicly.
Yeah, let's not cock block people. Let's not tease
them. No. I'm not going to go into too much. I don't want to go into detail, but my point is, TNA is much more of a disaster than it even appears. That's really my point. And not only is it much more of a disaster than it even appears, it's so much of a disaster that somebody who is really not an insider, I'm not an insider, not even close to it, but it's an open secret now how bad some of this shit is. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a disaster that somebody like me is hearing horror stories that aren't even being reported on. And I'm not the only one, by the way. There are other people. So it is just a complete and utter disaster beyond almost anything that people can fathom. And their damage control attempts when every inevitable new disaster comes down the pike only make things worse.
No, and the sad thing is, because people have to defend Dixie Carter, it makes them look stupid. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like Billy Corgan, I don't care what you think about the Smashing Pumpkins. I don't think what you care about Revolution Pro. The guy never came across as an idiot before. You know what I mean? Maybe sometimes an asshole, maybe arrogant, whatever, dude. Like, and I have stories about Billy Corgan that'll make you laugh, Dylan. I'll tell you off the air. Now I'm cock blocking the audience. Sorry, audience. But when he started defending Dixie Carter and TNA against Dave Meltzer, I thought, oh, God, well, the guy sounds like a fucking idiot, you know? I don't have to mention the name, but I will. Bob Ryder. You know, you've already given your Bob Ryder rants, you know, and I'm sure we could do a couple of those. People like those, Dylan. We might have you give one of those. What did Bob Ryder say about tonight's show? Do you know?
I have no idea. I'm sure he extolled the virtues of it. I will say that before the show, he was verbally lambasting Dave Meltzer on Twitter for allegedly erroneous reporting about certain TNA talents leaving.
Like which ones? Which ones?
I don't remember. I think it may have even been a couple of the. I think it might have been maybe Austin Kong and somebody else.
Oh, okay.
But you know what? Bob Ryder, he's a joke. I mean, he's the absolute wretched of the earth. He's the reason that of course Frantz Fanon wrote the great book The Wretched of the Earth about the Algerian. Resistance movement to French colonialism,
right.
And really, Bob Ryder is one of those people that the Algerians sort of slaughtered. He's just the absolute piece of human garbage. I can't stand that. But he exemplifies the problem with TNA too, because again, without going into too much detail, he's a guy who talks out of both sides of his mouth, begs for jobs from promotions when his promotion's on its ass, who reports stuff behind the scenes and stooges off to these newsletter people who he allegedly hates, even though that's what he owes his entire job to, and then turns around and criticizes those same people. I mean, he's pretty much the textbook. And the thing is, Ryder is the guy who all these other morons at TNA, Mecca, and all these other fan sites take their marching orders from, like the little lightnings they are. And it's fucking disgusting. It's disgusting to watch. And it's sad. You know, the sad thing is you hear people all the time say, and Will, you've heard this, no matter how bad TNA is, it's not going to be a good thing when they go out of business. I even heard Meltzer say this not that long ago. It's not going
to
be a good thing
because they
want
to give the boys
you know what? First of all, these guys aren't getting paid. Most of them are on per day deals now. They're not even under real contracts in the first place. So that whole argument to me is questionable at best. Even the money argument, I think, is questionable at best. I mean, a guy like AJ Styles made more money outside, or as much or more money outside of TNA, and has raised his profile than he was making in TNA.
Well, check this out. This has always been my argument on that, Dylan, because I'm actually one of the people who advocates for the death of TNA. Seriously, like, I'm one of the ones who will openly admit I hope the company closes and shuts down. My argument has always been, when wrestling insults the viewer, when it insults the intelligence of the casual fan or the people that you're trying to get to like wrestling, you know, that aren't 10 years old or that aren't fucking high school dropouts from fucking bumfuck. I'm gonna say a place in North Idaho, okay? Because I don't want to offend the South. All right, but you get the drift. When I think that when wrestling is at its worst, which I think TNA has been the culprit of many times, I think it's actively bad to have bad wrestling on television, day in, day out, week in, week out, that actively insults your intelligence, that makes you embarrassed to be a wrestling fan, because I think it makes it harder, one, for us, those of us who enjoy wrestling, because we do see value in it, right? But also for wrestlers themselves, because when you're not taken seriously, you know, by the vast majority of the public, right, it makes it harder for this industry to grow. That's my take. If there's more bad wrestling than good wrestling, that is a bad thing for the industry.
Completely agree. And I've made a similar argument, which is basically sort of a spinoff of that argument, which is TNA has utterly and completely failed at being a real number two. They're not even a number two anymore, no matter what, whether they stay or whether they go. They've completely and utterly failed at that. They've completely and utterly failed.
And you can't call yourself – hold on. You can't call yourself a number two when you can't even get 300 fucking people in the door for a free fucking show. Now, tonight was an exception. Tonight, right, there was a packed, it looked like a nice little packed house. But, you
yeah,
know,
but nobody pays. Nobody pays for these
That's
shows.
What I'm saying. They don't pay for it. They don't fucking pay for it. You know?
I mean, they're not, TNA, they failed being a number two. They've completely and utterly failed being an alternative to the WWE. In no way, shape, or form are they an alternative. They have completely and utterly failed to create new stars, which is at the very least what you would want out of an upstart wrestling company, you think. You know, they have not done any of the things, not a single one of the things that you would want a newer or fresher product or a serious alternative or a number two, whatever the fuck you want to call it. They've done absolutely none of those things well. None of them. And after 13 years of not doing them well, not only are they a joke, but people who are affiliated with them in many cases have become jokes through no fault of their own, I might add.
Oh, great.
Think about this. We have a promotion that has been around for 13 years. Tonight was their 13th anniversary show, right? So that's a long haul, okay? Especially in the modern world. That's a good run in theory. And in 13 years, and people will say, oh, well, who gives a shit about this? But, you know, every year, geeks like me obsess over the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. And this promotion's been around for 13 years. They haven't produced a single person in 13 years that you could look at and say, this guy's had a Hall of Fame career by the standards of that group.
They've hurt candidates.
They've severely hurt candidates. There's not a person. I don't know that anybody has been helped by their time in TNA. Maybe Sting, I guess, if you wanted to argue that he was a pretty good promo there where he really wasn't previously. But really, they've not helped anybody. I mean, nobody leaves TNA with a better reputation than they had going in, or very, very, very few people anyway. And nobody comes in and is able to sustain the momentum they had when they got there. You know, both of us put over Aries. The reality is, does anybody really think Austin Aries would have had better matches and you know, been a more dynamic character and a more interesting guy to follow if he wasn't in TNA? Of course he would have been more interesting to follow. There's no one who has benefited from being in TNA. And yes, these guys have gotten their checks and they've got families to feed, and I don't begrudge anybody for signing for TNA. I would never, ever in a million years do that. But, you know, you're never going to convince me that it is good for the wrestling business for such a grossly inferior product that's terrible at doing anything right and has, you know, at this point isn't even really paying a lot of the guys and is cutting people left and right and putting people on pro-date deals. You're never going to convince me that it's a huge, sad day in the annals of the wrestling business and that if a shitbox like that goes out of business.
No, I agree. It's not. I agree. And on that note, Dylan, we're going to wrap it up. The next time you hear us talking about TNA, unless we rant about some news story that comes out in the next 3 months, we'll probably be on the death of TNA, which will definitely be an epic show because I'm already writing my notes on it, you know. So, no, seriously, man. I mean, 13 years, like you said, 13 years of stupidity. You know what I mean? When the best you can say is that occasionally a show will have a great match, you know, embarrassing, but we can put it this way. You and I could brainstorm and probably come up with 20 great matches in TNA's history, right?
Sure.
But we'd have to brainstorm and we'd have to research. It'd probably take us about 3 days to come up with those 20 matches. All right. You and I have probably given 20 stupid things that TNA is about in this one show. You know what I mean? Nazi production, stupid finishes, on and on and on and on. Okay? Incoherent storylines, throwing people off train tracks. I'm sure, guys, listen to the last hour and a half. There's 20 stupid things that TNA did on the show, where in the history of the promotion, we would have to brainstorm to come up with 20 great moments. That's how fucked up this company is.
Yes, in 13 years. And in case anybody was wondering, because I didn't, we normally do this gimmick, and I guess we didn't explicitly do this gimmick, this is a thumbs down show for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not a terrible show. I will say that, because there was, I'd say there was three good matches on the show. The opener, the second match with Jesse and Robbie, and then the Miracle Aries match with Richards.
Yeah. And two of those were ruined by bad finishes.
But I was just about to say, but you had bad finishes even in the good matches, and so much illogical shit, and so much TNA being TNA, and it's like, even on a show where they actually managed to piece together three good matches and nothing that I thought was outright bad other than the craziness of the main event, because the gimmick is so stupid.
Well, no, hold on, that Matt Morgan match was bad.
Okay, fair enough. But the point is, it wasn't like there was anything that was offensively bad the way there's no worst match of the year contender or anything like that.
Sure,
sure. Even on a show like that, where the median match was probably average or maybe even slightly above average, it still is an easy thumbs down just because TNA is TNA and they can't do anything right.
Nothing. Nothing right. You know, it's, oh man. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Fuck this company. This will be the last pay-per-view of TNA I ever do a reaction show to. Sorry to burst your bubble. If Dylan wants to do one with someone from TNA Mecca, sure. Why not? Yeah. I know you'd really enjoy that, but yeah, thumbs down. Shit show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Keep an ear out for Dylan on the trademarks and for the Wrestling Culture podcast. Keep an eye or ear out for me. We're going to do more reaction shows next weekend. We got the July 4th special from Japan on the WWE Network. We got the big New Japan show on the 5th. And then after that, we'll have the Battleground. Is that it? Battleground? The Battleground pay-per-view. So hear us on the reaction show. Keep an ear out for me and JR on the Dangerous Alliance. And until next time, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.